Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of The Takeoff. Today is the 22nd of November. When you'll be hearing us, it'll be the 23rd of November. So good to have you with us today. We're on that crazy trajectory right into Christmas. We've got essentially a month until we all break up, take a few weeks off, take a few weeks to recuperate. What a year it's been. Absolutely insane. It was so good to meet everyone last week at the Takeoff Christmas drinks. We had around 80 to 90 people there. It was a really, really good night. And really interesting to see the variety of different people from, you know, the pre-construction world, the quantity surveying and commercial world, and the different sectors that those, you know, those people work in, you know, everything from construction, but also right through to, you know, oil and gas, the engineering, to the subcontract world. So, you know, really good. And I thank you if you're listening to this podcast each week, and if you made an appearance, hopefully we got to chat and say hello. But big thanks to everyone. This week we're going to discuss five reasons why construction and engineering companies for Australia and New Zealand should be hiring more overseas professionals. So this is something that I've talked about quite a lot over the last sort of 3 to 4 years, really since I moved to New Zealand back in 2016 and started facing the whole we need local experience hurdle that seems to go on. So when I initially arrived, so I arrived in New Zealand November 2016, moved to Australia in 2019. I'd never really come up with that whole that we need local experience thing. I mean, I started recruiting in the UK and Ireland about 4 or 5 years before that. And really, you know, when we were looking for people, you know, we were just looking for the best qualified people, you know, the ones who spoke the best English, had the best communication skills, and had the best track record. You know, we weren't looking necessarily for you had to have experience in the Northern Irish market, or you had to have experience in the London market or anything like that. It was, can you do the job? Have you got experience in this? Good. Well, here's a job offer, you know. In Australia and New Zealand, there's a whole sort of, well, you know, people aren't going to be able to pick up the local lingo or the methodologies that quickly, et cetera, et cetera. And what that does is it creates havoc within the recruitment market. It means that, you know, local people are getting paid way higher than probably that they should be getting paid. And, you know, there's going to be a bit of a bottleneck over the next few years with the amount of work that's going on, and the, you know, the lack of people that can do the work locally. So today we're going to discuss five reasons why we should be considering overseas professionals, and super excited to be doing this with you today. So number one, currently, the demand throughout the construction market outweighs supply significantly. So if I was to put a figure on it, now this isn't, I haven't done a whole load of research about this, but I'm just going off my own exposure to the market as a business owner. In the Queensland market, where most of our business is, I would say there's approximately 7 jobs or 8 jobs for every 1 professional. Okay. What that means is that there's 6 to 7 companies out there that are, 1, needing people, 2, disappointed if they don't get the right people, and 3, aren't able to complete work because they don't have the people. Okay. So that creates massive challenges across the board, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But currently in the Queensland market, there is just outrageous amounts of construction activity. So one, we've got Queens Wharf, which is a $3.6 billion project. We've got Crossover Rail, which is about $5.6 to $6 billion project. We've got the Brisbane Waterfront, which is about $1.5 billion or something like that. The Queensland state government's investing about $7.6 billion in health. We've got the Brisbane 2032 Olympic Games, which is 10 years away, but there's construction activity in terms of new stadiums with the Brisbane Metro. They're looking at revamping the Victoria Park. They're also talking about building an Olympic Village, which is going to house around 3,000 people. There are infrastructure that's going to be needed to accommodate that is obviously, if you're putting an extra 3,000 to 4,000, 5,000 cars on the road, you know, once those once the Brisbane 32 Olympic Village is repurposed to apartments, if you're putting 4,000 to 5,000 more cars on the road, there's going to be needing for more road widening, more road infrastructure. We've also got, you know, Carmichael Rail, which is going up sort of central to northern Queensland. We've got Gold Coast Light Rail. We've got TMR. So this is all within one state, you know, state of about 6 million people. There's phenomenal amounts of work in it. When we look at what's going on in Sydney, obviously massive investment in construction infrastructure, health as well. Victoria, obviously huge boom in Victoria. So, you know, you look at this as a country, you look at Queensland as a state, there's tremendous amounts of work and there just isn't the people to do the work. So if we continue to have this philosophy of only hiring local candidates, what would that mean for this pipeline of projects? If in reality, if we're building the infrastructure for an Olympics Games, an Olympic Games, look, I started working in recruitment in 2010. So that was coming on the onto the 2012 Olympic Games in London. And the amount of construction that went on in the 4 to 5 years prior to that was just insane. And if you look at what London has as a city, you know, it already has, you know, massive infrastructure, massive. We've got the metro, they've got light rail, they've got, you know, it's one of the global financial markets. And so they already have stadiums, you know, Premier League stadiums, they already had Olympic stadiums. So we're like, even though Brisbane's in a decent position, there's still going to be a heck of a lot of construction work that goes on. So my feeling is if we don't begin to open up to overseas employees, I just don't know if this work is going to get done. Certainly not going to get done on time. Certainly not going to get done on budget. All because there's a whole thing of, well, they've never worked in the Australian market, so they don't know. But if we think about Australia and New Zealand as two countries, I mean, they were 100% built on immigration. So I don't know why now we're looking at it and going, well, we're a little bit unsure because this guy's worked mostly overseas. What do you think happens overseas, really? You know, if you're working for a multiplex language work, John Holland in the UK or Saudi Arabia or Qatar, you know, yes, there has been some shady stuff went on there with labor and all that sort of stuff, but we've got to look at this from a bigger picture and say, right, well, they're coming in into the Australian market. They've had exposure to major projects. Usually on those international based projects, you've maybe got 30, 40 different nationalities. A lot of them maybe not speaking English. So there's massive communication difficulties. You know, if they're able to lead projects and to be delivered on time, et cetera, within those conditions and those markets, I mean, that's a tough, tough challenge. And if you think about as a whole, what does the industry need? We need those who are better at communicating. We need those who are better at leading and managing and mentoring. And we need construction to be more open as an industry. You know, if we look at the tech industry, you know, if we look at medical devices, if we look at, you know, even the finance industry, you know, there's a lot more collaboration and continuity. You know, for example, if you're working for an investment bank in Singapore, are you going to have the same difficulty finding an opportunity in the Sydney market? No. But if you're a construction professional working in Singapore, are you going to have the same opportunities in Brisbane or Sydney? No. And why is that? You know, and that's something that's quite frustrating. If you look at someone who's maybe got a really strong track record, you know, speaks great English, you know, ticks all the boxes, and they're not getting an opportunity because they haven't got the right exposure to Australian or Kiwi methodologies. I don't know. It's something that I don't believe is a real justifiable reason for rejecting someone. Of course, we all have what we would prefer. You know, I would certainly prefer if I had an Aussie bloke in the office who had 10 years experience and all the clients and all the contacts. But the reality of it is they're too hard to find. And we've got to look at maybe taking guys in from overseas, training them up, developing them up, et cetera, et cetera. So the demands in this market completely outweigh supply. And if we don't start moving things forward in terms of bringing people together, having more of an open mind, being more susceptible to training and development, then we're going to have our backs against the wall. We're going to start hiring lower quality. That creates issues. So if I was a business owner in the construction, I would be leading from the front and bringing these guys in, training them up, locking them into contracts, goodwill contracts, where you can maybe say, after 3 years, you're going to get a 20% bonus of your salary. So you're locking them in for 3 years. You know that you're spending the time and investing in them. Certain things that you can do. And those people are going to be the ones that really kick on your business, because they're going to have the IP, they're going to have the knowledge, they're going to have the backgrounds. And in 3 years' time, your business is in a far, far better position. Whereas if you don't start taking people like this on the market, then you're going to be still looking for local labor. You're paying a fortune. You're probably not attracting the right people. You start looking for lower quality people, and your clients start to get pissed off because the product's not the same. So yeah, it's a no-brainer for me. Okay. Number two, salaries of local talent have went up around 60%. Okay. Since around 2020, I'm looking at this. And I'm looking at this as more of a generalization. So not every salary has went up 60%, or every job title has went up 60%, but as a whole, it's probably up to around that 60%, especially in that sort of commercial contract side of things. As an example, I've been recently recruiting for a senior estimator. You know, 2 years ago, a really good salary in that market would have been 200 to 220 as a package. This role is around that 300. Now, that's slightly different because, you know, this particular company is looking for a very, very niche track record. However, if we look at CAs, what was a CA, a good solid CA getting paid 18 months ago to a year ago? Probably 140 to 150. Now, good CAs in that 180 to 200 mark quite easily, you know. And we're seeing some solid CAs now getting up to 230, 240. And in my opinion, companies are probably doing the right thing by offering the bigger salaries to an extent. One, the main reason, because they're less likely to move anywhere else if they're getting paid well. And if you trust that CA or you trust that senior QS, they're going to make that money back for you anyway. So is it worth going through four people, paying four recruitment fees and all that sort of stuff? Or you just lock this person in and say, right, you know, you're getting paid this because of this market right now, but we're going to have to renegotiate this when the market slips a little bit. You just got to be open and honest with your team. Recently, I've heard from one of my clients that laborers in the market on major sort of EBA projects are earning upwards of $100 per hour, right, in the local market. So one specific project, I'll not mention it, you know, but it's in the city in Brisbane. Night shift for a laborer earning $109 per hour. Okay. And there's 26 rostered days off. There's 4 weeks holiday and 12 days sick leave included in that. So a laborer in this market is earning the guts of $250,000. Okay. Now think of that. That is absolutely insane. Okay. Like, I remember I started working as a laborer on my uncle's building site, and I was earning 20 quid a day, right? £20 is about $38 a day. I remember starting off 7 o'clock in the morning, working through to about 4:30, 5 o'clock. All it did was rain all day. You're out in a building site. There was no roof. You were just getting soaked all day long. I remember thinking, will I go over the road to the supermarket and buy some lunch? or will I just sit here and eat my pack sandwich? And lunch was going to cost £3-4, which was essentially like 3-4 hours worth of work. So like, if you understand, my head blows when I hear $109 an hour. If that gets around Ireland, we're going to have 50,000 Irish here by the end of this year. You know, it's just incredible money, and it's absolutely obscene money. It's sickening money. It shouldn't be allowed. It's for that. The reality of it is, for an unskilled role, it's ridiculous. I'm sorry if you're, you know, involved in those types of projects or whatever, but how does that last? How does that go on? That's going to send construction companies bust. And what's going to happen is we're all going to end up in a recession because of a greedy number of individuals. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. So if you're looking for local talent and you want them to have local experience, you're going to be paying up to 60% more. And you're hearing about these salaries. I had an individual who joined a company last year on 100K. 6-8 months later, he joined another company at 180K. That's nearly 100% pay rise. Well, essentially, it's an 80% pay rise. So we've got to really consider things and have more of a strategy in place. If I was a business owner right now, I'd be thinking about, what can I do to make sure we're bulletproof in 2 to 3 years' time? Take that long-term approach and stick to your guns, because if you continue to pay way over the market, your margins are eroding. You're not going to be winning more projects if you're building those margins in, and all of a sudden your pipeline of work drops off a cliff. It's a really challenging market to be in, and we've got to play smart. George Bernard Shaw, the Irish playwright, once said, "The price of ability does not depend on merit, but on supply and demand." Really love that quote. So that's my quote for this week. It's not about talent. It's not about how good you are. It's how much you're needed. In this market, there's a lot of people that are needed. But when the market changes and there's a little bit of a fall, there's, you know, going to be some big projects finishing over the next few years, like Queen's Wharf and Cross River Rail. What happens when all those people come on the market again? You're being overpaid because you're needed. But when you're not needed, what happens? Okay, so just remember that. Number three, candidates on the local market are only moving for better money or a better job title. So if you're in this market and you're an estimator or a CA or a QS or a project manager, you're not moving from your current company unless you're offered a senior project manager, senior estimator, or an extra 20 or 30K. Just, that's a fact. There's no one moving for the same. There's no one moving really for job security. You might start seeing people moving from, you know, private sector, like retail, industrial. Those guys might be desperate to get into that sort of health and education, defense. But by and large, we're talking, there's no real like trajectory of people moving across. So if you think about that, they're staying where they are unless they're paid more or better job title or better working conditions is another thing. You know, if someone's offered maybe an extra 5-10K, but could work from home 2 days a week, and, you know, the drive is only 20 minutes rather than 40 minutes, you might find someone moves for that sort of reason. But as a whole, as an industry, you got to expect to pay more than what they're on and offer a better job title. If not, they'll not move. And so you're going to have vacancies for a long time. You're going to have employees overworking to compensate for those vacancies. So all of a sudden, employees are working maybe 50, 60 hours a week rather than what they should be doing, which would be 40 hours a week. And all of a sudden, they start to get pissed off. And all of a sudden, they start applying for jobs. Okay. So this all is a big circle, and it is kind of like that domino effect. You hit one, it all starts to affect the whole supply chain. So you've got to really consider things. If you have to overpay for a local candidate, and if you have to offer a job title of a senior person and they're maybe not senior, and all of a sudden that affects the apple cart in the business, all of this stuff matters for culture, for continuity, for your clients, all that sort of stuff. So really, I believe you could be getting someone in who is maybe coming off the, you know, coming from maybe it's the Middle East, maybe it's South Africa, maybe it's the UK, and they're going to be a lot more affordable. And again, you can lock them in and they're moving for the right reasons. Okay. So that takes us on to number four. International candidates are moving for a genuine reason. They're not moving for a better job title. They're not moving for a better salary. Generally speaking, they're moving to build a better life. So you might, you know, like myself, I was 26 when I left Ireland. I only thought I would be out in this side of the world for a year, met my wife, ended up, I'm here for forever now, okay? You know, people are out here to travel, to explore, to find a better life, to find better opportunities. And what happens then is that you have someone who's maybe moving from the UK, Ireland, South Africa, Asia, UK, whatever it might be, but they're moving for the sun. They're moving for a more relaxed lifestyle. They're moving for to grow up, to maybe take care of their kids and allow them to grow up in a better environment, you know, moving away from the hustle and bustle of London to the relaxed lifestyle of Newstead or Bondi or wherever you might be, you know. So you've got to think about that. They're moving for genuine reasons. They're not moving to earn an extra 40k, you know. When I'm speaking to people, they're quite realistic about expectations, and they just want to get themselves into the market and prove themselves. And I believe those fundamental characteristics is what we should be looking at when we're employing someone. Those motivations combined with, you know, your track record, your relationships, your tenures and your businesses. If you've got the right motivations, the right goals, the right characteristics, those people are going to buy into your business way, way, way more than that local person who's been tapped up by a recruiter like myself and is only moving for an extra 30, 40k, because that's the market that we're in. If you're a 250k person, then you're only really moving for 300. You know, like, why would you move? Why would you have to start all over again? That's just a fact. So there's 50k. You might get someone come off the plane. You might be able to get them in at 150, train them up, and they could be just as good within 18 months as that person who's on 250. Do you know? So all of these, there's commercial reasons why this makes sense. There's longevity reasons why this makes sense. There's culture reasons why this makes sense. And in terms of the building industry, it needs to happen. It's not even just if it comes across, we may take a look at it. It needs to happen. Otherwise, the industry won't last. So that's point number five. If we don't start hiring international candidates, the industry won't be able to survive. Companies are already beginning to hold back on tendering for new projects because they don't believe they'll be able to deliver the job. So what happens then? Projects get shelved, projects get put on hold, and all of a sudden, you know, that pipeline that was looking really, really good at the beginning, now it begins to look, oh, well, you know, they're holding up. All of a sudden, interest rates are higher, salaries are higher. You know, maybe we'll leave this 3-4 years until things calm down. Do you get me? So if we're not looking at this as a big picture, then we could be moving ourselves into a bit of a slowdown. And even though I've talked about all of those big projects up the top, again, there's maybe only going to be 5-10% of the market that takes advantage of that, because they're in quite niche areas. They're very technical based projects. A lot of that stuff will be dominated by that sort of tier one or high tier two space. And the reality of it is those sort of tier two, tier three, which is really the lifeblood of the industry. You know, your businesses with 50 or 50 so people or less, you know, they're the ones that really dominate the industry. So for you know, if they haven't got a whole lot of work because, you know, work's on, you know, on the back burner, what happens long term? So again, we got to think about this as some big picture thinking and be able to put a strategy in place. Now, you could look at different things that you can do. And this is something, if you're out there listening to this, you maybe want to reach out to me. But maybe you bring an international candidate in, you know, you look at locking them into sort of 2 to 3 year contract where they get a bonus that maybe sort of 10%, 15% of their salary once they complete those 3 years. Plus you maybe be able to combine a bit of a buddy system, get someone in who's maybe experienced in overseas, maybe they've been working on the World Cup in Qatar. Now they're in Brisbane or Sydney. Maybe they just need a bit of a buddy to team up with for 6 months. Maybe they could tackle a project together. There's different things that we can do to integrate people in the businesses and make these a lot more streamlined, a lot more processed, and a lot more beneficial to everyone in the business. And one other thing that I haven't even mentioned, like international people are bloody smart, you know, like we're talking probably more degrees than the hiring managers in Australia and New Zealand, let's face it, you know, bachelors of science, some of them have masters, you know, masters in construction law, masters in construction sustainability, all of these things are really, really smart people, generally speaking, probably speaking more languages than you. So I get quite frustrated. I look at someone, I go, he's got 3 or 4 degrees, he speaks 3 languages, and he's got 15 years experience, and this guy can't get a job because he hasn't worked in friggin' Logan Reserve. Do you know what I mean? Like, come on, let's get a grip, guys. How long is it really going to take to build that subcontractor knowledge, that client knowledge? Yeah, it could be 6 months. But after 6 months, you've got a real strong candidate who can really push your business forward. So get a strategy in place. We need to hire more people. This isn't like a hope and a dream. It's vitally important that the industry starts to take up more international based candidates. They're more open to that, more receptive to that, and they begin to look at things from a bigger picture, because we're gonna, you know, we're seeing the UK is now in recession. We're seeing, you know, the US is, I mean, it's a technical recession, but Sleepy Joe Biden's changed his mind and decided not to call it a recession. So whatever happens to us, I think we could be a bit of like a technical recession, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not an economist, but I can't see construction slowing down that much if we begin to hire more people and start to oil the machine and start letting construction really take off. So this has been The Takeoff. Hopefully you've had some value from this. If you listen to this, guys, can you please do me a favor and give me a review? No one ever gives me reviews. I believe you can just go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Just hit that 5-star. I'd really appreciate it. It helps me get up the ranks. I mean, I do this every week. It's not like I'm making money from this or anything like that. But ultimately, I'm just here to try and add some value to the industry. Please give me a review. If you don't want to give me a review, give a shout out to your mates and say, listen, give this a listen. Really appreciate it. Hope you have a cracking week. We've only got a few weeks left to Christmas. I'll see you next week. Take it easy.